and proceed to case number three, please. Mary Reed versus the Monteno School District.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. I'm Armin Andrew. I'm representing the plaintiff, Mary Margaret Reed. This case involves a teacher who worked for the defendant from 1971 up until the present. Her credentials are extremely impressive. She has a PhD, two master's degrees, a bachelor, many years of experience and administrative experience.
What's her PhD in education?
I'm sorry?
What is her PhD? What subject is it? Education?
Yes.
I'm glad you found out.
That's the benefit of having your client here. My client also applied for positions, two principalship positions, and none of the candidates had a PhD. None of the candidates had two master's degrees. None of them had the experience my client had. None of them had the administrative experience that my client had, and yet these younger males under 40 received the positions and my client did not. We contend that that is evidence of discrimination based on her race, on her age and her sex.
Was it done because they could get them cheaper and with all of her qualifications she was entitled to more money?
No, because the salary, nobody asked, for example, whether or not she would take the same salary that was offered to anyone else, nor did anyone indicate that there's a scale that says she has to make more because
there
she has no
more. There is no scale in that
no,
district.
Okay. No, so that was not
there
an issue here.
There is.
I'm sorry?
There frequently is.
I understand, but there wasn't in this case.
Right.
The district court found on the discrimination aspect of the case that there was, in fact, a prima facie case established. What the district court failed to find was that there was evidence of pretext. And part of the difficulty was that I think that the district court was looking for direct evidence of pretext, where the law allows indirect evidence of pretext as well. And the law makes it clear that if, in fact, a person's qualifications are so clearly objectively better than another person's, and that person is selected with the lesser, for example, if you had a comparison of a, to make it extreme, GED to a PhD, even though the hiring authority might say we felt the GED was more qualified than the PhD, clearly a jury is entitled, a reasonable jury is entitled to look behind that explanation to determine whether that's actually the reason that person got the position. This is similar to this case because there's no argument about the objective qualifications here. As a matter of fact, what's interesting is that in the interview process of the second position, no one was ever even inquired into the background, objective background of the respective candidates. They asked questions like whether or not she could be a team player and various other types of things of that sort. The same
didn't
types
they have some kind of file before them, too? I mean, given her qualifications?
I assume that they...
Depending on their questions they asked in an interview?
I assume that they do, but the point that I'm making is that to when you ask things like, are you going to be a team player, things of that sort, they have nothing to do with qualifications. And what's interesting, if you compare the two processes that took place here, the one, my client was told she didn't get the position because she wasn't as qualified for him because that particular candidate had been a principal and was simply making a lateral move. With regard to the second situation, though, that candidate had not been a principal. It was not a lateral move. That candidate had no administrative experience whatsoever. And yet, that candidate, a younger male, still got the position over her.
Well, didn't someone find that she wasn't a team player?
The superintendent, Newton Fink, issued a confidential memo to the board, indicating to the board that he felt that she was not a team player. That never was shown to my client. In fact, the only time she discovered that was during discovery in this case. So she was never able to even address that. In the second panel, that panel that was doing the interview and brought up that same point, can you be an administrative team player?
Of course.
My client said, of course you can. But nonetheless...
Had she been one up until that time? Or
she had always
why
been
did they ask that question, do you think?
because the superintendent had raised that issue in a confidential memo, which my client wasn't aware of. And
I know you said that, but why do you think he did raise it? Is there some evidence in this record that she was not a team player?
No, there is not. In fact, he raised the issue because he felt, based on some examination of documents prior to the time he even became a superintendent, that he just felt she wasn't a team player.
That's what I said.
Right. So he just issued a memo on the basis of that when he wasn't even there at the time that this was taking place. So,
well, that's what sunk her, though, presumably, wasn't it, this memo?
It may be, but that's not what they said. That's the problem. And if that is what sunk her, then particularly on the issue of retaliation, that becomes very germane because, by definition, if you complain against your employer, you can't be considered a team player. So by virtue of complaining, which the law allows her to do, she can't be considered a team player.
But there's nothing wrong with the superintendent if he truly believes something based upon those records presented to him to document that evidence and to present it to the reviewing and appointing authorities.
Nothing wrong with that. The problem is he didn't do it with regard to the male candidates. He didn't look back into their background to determine.
Well, is there any, do you know of any evidence in their backgrounds that they aren't?
No, nor is there any evidence in my client's background that she's not.
He submitted this when they were considering the first principalship, is that right?
That's correct. And in the second principalship, the panel that actually interviewed her took up the same issue again and asked her the question whether she was an administrative team player, which at the time obviously seemed odd to her because she wasn't even aware of some.
What is your best case upholding the evidence here that they found that that there was no pretextual reason?
The best case that there was pretextual.
Supporting your case.
Right. Yeah. Is the objective qualifications of my client versus the qualifications of the other client.
That's the qualification. And you're only relying on the qualifications.
No. In addition, there's the statements that were made by the superintendent concerning team players that were only applied to my client, and that has some application with regard to the issue of retaliation as well, because if you're complaining of discrimination, you can't be very well considered to be a team player, even though the law allows you to do that. I'd like to save the balance of my time for rebuttal. Please.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. Good morning, Counsel. I'd like to begin to say that it was the prerogative of the superintendent to make an assessment of who his principals would be. And it was his prerogative to comment that if the plaintiff was not a team player, he could very well judge that she wasn't a team player and inform his feeling to the committee who was selecting
Doesn't
the
that
principals.
Present a bit of a due process problem? I mean, she's not confronted with the witnesses opposing her. That's just kind of a secret memo that's submitted to the people.
Your Honor, I don't believe that there's due process implications in making personnel assessments for potential promotions in this employment context. I don't think it was denying her of any type of property right. I don't necessarily think she had a right to a principalship. But I would like to talk about the two separate principalships. The first principalship, which plaintiff alleges she was denied, went to Mr. Furby. Mr. Furby was already a principal at that time. The plaintiff did not request that principalship position until she was informed that she would be transferred back to teaching a classroom from a counseling position that she was holding as a teacher. Once she was informed that she'd be moved back to a classroom, she requested that principalship. The district court found that, in fact, that principalship had already been decided, would be given to Mr. Furby in a lateral transfer. Mr. Furby was a principal in another school and also held.
Do I recall correctly that she did not make a formal application? It was raised only in an informal conversation?
That's also correct, Your Honor. Now, with regard to that, we don't feel that the plaintiff has shown any evidence whatsoever that those explanations for why Mr. Furby got the position were pretext. With regard to the second principalship position, these claims, the claims of retaliation and the claims of discrimination arising out of this principalship position were not, never presented to the EEOC. Although not the grounds on which the district court ruled, we assert that this court may affirm on any grounds, and that would be an appropriate ground in the record on which to affirm. The claims arising out of the principalship, the second principalship given to Mr. Eshelman, were never presented to the EEOC. But even if they had been, the Eshelman position was considered by a committee made up of, in part, four women, women who were, some of whom were also over 40 years of age. They interviewed both Mr. Eshelman as well as the plaintiff, as well as another candidate. The plaintiff finished third out of the three candidates, and Mr. Eshelman was unanimously selected by that committee. The plaintiff has not shown any evidence whatsoever.
It's pretty subjective, though, isn't it? I mean, they just interviewed, and that was their impression. One was better than the other, and that was how the decision was made. That's a little hard to evaluate, isn't it?
Judge, I admit that there may have been some subjective matters considered there. However,
well, it's all subjective.
Well, that may be true, Judge, but it's not for the plaintiff to substitute her subjective belief for that of the decision maker. In fact, it was the committee and the superintendent and the school board who's charged with the responsibility of selecting the principalship. It is their prerogative to select and to choose the criteria as long as it's not discriminatory. And there's been no showing whatsoever, not a scintilla of evidence, that the decision was based upon discriminatory criteria. Yes, they may have considered the superintendent's comments that he considered the appellant to be not a team player. And in response to an earlier question, there is evidence in the record that the plaintiff appellant was not a team player. There is testimony that she would leave immediately after school and not attend school functions. And she had competing responsibilities at a college where she was a resident.
She was teaching in a college as well as in a school district, didn't
she? Actually, she was, I believe it was that she was a resident advisor at a local college, and that she had many competing obligations there. These were all things that were considered by the committee, and as long as they're not discriminatory, and it's not for the plaintiff to substitute her judgment for the judgment of the decision makers. Judge, I would, Your Honors, I would just say that with regard to the retaliation claim, that was not presented to the EEOC. The law is clear that all such claims must be presented to the EEOC. And
well, is that true of a retaliation claim in particular? If it comes out of some other claim which is submitted, I think there's a pretty good exception for the retaliation claim.
That is true, Judge. In fact, the case law said that when a retaliation claim arises out of a claim brought to the EEOC, that it will be heard. However, the claim in this case, the retaliation claim, arises out of the second principalship position, which was, in fact, granted after she filed her EEOC claim in the year 2000. And so that retaliation claim does not arise out of a claim presented to the EEOC. With that, Judge, I thank you for your time, and we ask that you affirm the decision of the district court in this matter.
Thank you, counsel.
As Your Honor brought out, clearly retaliation claims can be filed without going before EEOC again. The district court was correct in that ruling to argue that someone has to anticipate they're going to be retaliated against at some later time just doesn't wash. You have to make a retaliation claim after you've made a discrimination claim. So by definition, it has to be at a later date. And clearly, that's allowable. And any other charge like and reasonably related, and in this case, these involve the same individuals making the decision and the same positions, a principalship, it is like and reasonably related, and therefore the second discrimination charge was appropriate. Counsel talks about the fact that these decisions by management officials have to be allowed and have to be given whatever prerogative they have. But if that were true, then there can be no decision whatsoever and no determination as to whether or not there's been discrimination that took place, because any decision by any management official would have to be sanitized and accepted. That's not the law. The law is that if, in fact, not only you have direct evidence of discrimination, but you have indirect evidence of discrimination, you're permitted your day in court and you're permitted to go before a jury. And it's a determination by the jury, a reasonable jury, whether or not they could find discrimination. And that's the problem with the assessment of the district court. The district court's opinion may well be that, you know, my client didn't establish and convince him. But that's not the issue here. The question is whether or not a reasonable jury can find for her, or whether or not, as a matter of law, it has to be ruled on as being non-discriminatory. There's nothing in this case that says, as a matter of law, she could not prevail before a reasonable jury, and she should have been allowed that. There's no question that she was denied that, and for those reasons, this case should be reversed and remanded, and she should be allowed her day in court. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you both. We will proceed to case